The following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com.
Hey guys, Chris here, and I wanted to let you know that this episode of The Underdog is brought to you by our good friends at Skybook Sportsbook. Definitely our favorite place to make bets. If you're looking to place a bet, we encourage you to do it at Skybook Sportsbook. Visit them at skybook.ag. And now, let's get to this episode of The Underdog.
We might be underdog sports, but we came here to win. The most legit podcast, that's why we know you're tuning in. We cover the biggest news, we underdogs, but we can't lose. So trust the process, yes you, cause we got Chris and Anshu to bless you. With the best features, best stories, we diving deep like a Lambo leap. Wake up kid and stop snoring, we on point just like this beat. Bring the passion like the dog pound, in the cold, get a gold brown. Sit back and raise the cap, cause we start the show like right now.
Welcome to The Underdog, episode number 81. I'm Chris Horwoodell, and my co-host is back, ladies and gentlemen. Anshu Khanna in the house. Anshu, welcome back. I missed you, my friend.
Likewise. How did the fine Midwest treat you? I'm sorry we didn't get together, but Ohio, how was it?
Well, there'll be plenty of time for that. But Ohio was pretty good. It was perhaps a little bit long, I think it was at least a day too long. That last day was really just a lot of sit around and wait for a flight. But first day we went to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I'd never been there before. And that was enjoyable experience. So have you been?
I have never been to Canton.
I was surprised. I went in a little bit skeptical. I wasn't sure if it was going to be interesting enough, you know, to hold my attention for 3-4 hours. Very, very cool place, and I would encourage anybody to go.
That's awesome. I'm surprised you didn't think you'd like it. I mean, you're kind of what I would call a football nerd, so sounds like a good time. I have to check it out.
It was fun. So what else? The next day, I took in apologies in advance of this story to all Cleveland Indians fans, because I am apparently the Cleveland Indians jinx in human persona here. They were 0-5 while I was in town. We went to the game on Sunday versus, played. I don't even remember who they played, to be completely honest with you. The A's, the Oakland A's.
There you go.
They lost 6-0.
A's are hot.
And I got sunburned. So it was not an amazing experience.
Oh, no. And you weren't with Dan Bauer, so that would have, had you been with him, it would have been an amazing experience.
Yeah, it would have been cool just in the shade of Dan Bauer, such a towering presence.
I'm pretty sure you're taller than him, but it might be close.
It was fun. I really, really, I can't stress enough how much I enjoyed the Pro Football Hall of Fame, even if the end part of it is you walk through like all the eras of the Super Bowl. They did not have anything up for this year's Eagles championship. This year's Eagles Super Bowl.
What?
Nothing up. I was disappointed. There was a video you could watch, but there was no paraphernalia, and they did not have a replica of the Eagles Super Bowl ring from this year, and they had every other one.
That stands in stark contrast to what Philly, the city of Philadelphia, your beloved city, had in store for last weekend, where they played the game on it. They closed down the street and played the game on massive screens, and everyone was just boozing in the park.
We enjoy a good championship, and if we get one, we're going to enjoy it time and time and time again.
I mean, how many times have you rewatched it? Have you at all?
Parts of one, to be honest with you.
Wow, that's it? I remember when the Packers beat the Steelers, I swear I watched that 3 or 4 times over that summer. But we're almost there, Chris. I don't know if you were going to lean in this direction at all, but we're less than a week away from training camps opening up, so we're on the cusp of getting through this lull in the sports calendar.
We are, and I'm incredibly excited for that, and we're going to talk a lot of football a little bit later on. I want to talk about baseball first, though, because it's MLB All-Star Weekend, the most exciting time of the year. Everyone says so. Do you care about All-Star Weekend at all?
I, you know, I feel like going in, I feel like this is the most boring week of the sports year. Like, in my mind, it's there's nothing going on. But I watched the Home Run Derby yesterday. I was watching pregame earlier today for the All-Star game. There's some, you know, there's some romanticism about All-Star weekend, I think. I mean, the next 2 days are super boring, but, you know, the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game are pretty cool. And they have the World Cup right before it and the and, you know, the British Open, the Open Championship coming up. I think we may have lucked out this year with our sports wall.
Wimbledon?
Wimbledon, that's right. Absolutely. But, yeah, there's I don't know.
A lot of niche sports going on right now. Did I watch the Home Run Derby?
Right.
I did not. Yeah. I'm busy, unfortunately.
Oh, man. You missed first of all, the changes to the Home Run Derby are excellent. I have
Talk
to
about
that.
It. Tell
and,
me.
Well, just the fact that, I mean, I think they implemented it either a year or two ago, but this is the first year I really, really paid attention, I feel like. And basically, you have 4 minutes to hit as many, 3 minutes or 4 minutes, to hit as many home runs as you can. So it's not like the 10 out format that we used to have, you know, where, you know, any ground ball, fly ball, miss, swing and a miss, you know, is an out. Now you get to just bomb as many as you can. And it's a bracket style. So it's not just like a free for all. It's just, it's really well done. And it made for some really interesting matchups. Your boy, Rhys Hoskins, was absolutely awesome. I thought that, you know, they did a good job of separating, like, of kind of diversifying the types of players. There were two Cubs in it, which is, you know, whatever. But Kyle Schwarber put on a great show. I thought pretty much there was something for pretty much everyone there, with the exception of Brewer fans, because Jesus Aguilar did not look great. But other than that, you know, really cool. Good chance to see some young players like Aguilar and you know, and Max Muncy, guys you may not get a chance to see. And, like, for a sport that does a pretty terrible job of promoting its stars, I think that it was a really good show this year specifically.
Well, I want to talk about the champ a little bit here. Bryce Harper wins it. He hits 19, beats Kyle Schwarber in that, finals. Man. Harper's interesting to me, though. This guy, you know, we're talking about him as one of the big fish free agents of, you know, the past decade, really, coming up this year. Mm-hmm. But what
All
I'm
time.
Seeing, yeah, absolutely. What I'm seeing, though, every time I watch Bryce Harper is it seems like that swing is getting longer and longer and longer. And he's just trying to hit home run after home run. And it is hurting him. This guy's hitting .214 with a 0.0 WAR here at the All-Star break.
Is it a 0.0 WAR? Are you looking at Baseball Reference?
Yeah, it's a 0.0.
Okay, on FanGraphs it's 1.2. So, or I'm sorry, 1.3. You know, that's actually a pretty big difference. But
yeah
I mean, look, he's been bad. 214 would be far and away. I mean, he hit 319 last year. One thing they pointed out in the during the telecast, which I thought was interesting, Mark Teixeira specifically brought up the fact that this, you know, he was talking about complicated swings versus less complicated swings. And he was talking about Rhys Hoskins, actually, and how if you're a bigger, you know, younger player, you should just emulate Hoskins. The simplicity and the repeatability of the swing is just amazing. And then he was talking about Bryce, and, you know, Bryce, it looks sexy. I mean, there's so much violence in that swing, though, and there are a lot of moving parts, so it's not something easily repeatable. And I think you may be onto something there with the elongation of that swing. You know, that being said, like, there is just – that set of tools is insane. I mean, he's going to be – he's still 25 years old. It's hard to believe that. You know, his batting average at Boston play this year is .226. So that is going to skyrocket. I mean, there is just no way it should be at .226. Like, he's way too fast and way too hard of a hitter for that to be the case. So he's definitely suffered for some batted ball luck, but you know, I still agree with you. I mean, he's striking out 25% of the time when he's up to the plate. That would be his worst since he was a rookie, I believe. So, you know, that's got to come way down. You know, I agree. I think that he's pressing, but I expect a big second half from Bryce, and I still think that he will receive the biggest contract in MLB history when all said and done.
Yes, you said the BABP is .226. Does that speak to trying to hit home runs, though? Is that a bunch of pop-ups to the outfield?
It could be. I'd have to look, dig a little bit deeper into his batted ball. Let's see here. His hard hit percentage, it looks like, is – no, I mean, he's hitting the ball hard. Like, hard hit is generally, like,
so bad luck.
Yeah. I think he's had some bad luck, Chris. And I mean, we'll see what happens. At the same time, like I said, like, you know, his strikeouts have not been good. So his approach is different. His walk rate's up though too. So just kind of an odd mix. This doesn't look like Bryce Harper of the last few years. And, you got to think the contract's in the back of his mind.
So this is my question, though. Let's say the Fangraphs numbers are right and the Baseball Reference is a typo. Even if it's a 1.3, let's say he finishes the year at a 3 WAR.
Still not good.
How do you pay that guy $45, $50 million, which he could conceivably get in the open market this offseason?
I mean, look, I think you look at last year and the 5 WAR 2 years ago, 9.3. I mean, 9.3 WAR as a 21-year-old is – it's, you know, that's Hall of Fame stuff, obviously.
And let's not pretend like that's the norm. That's very much the outlier season for him. No other season has been above five.
I mean, he had 4 last year in 111 games, so you could argue that he was off pace for, you know, say 6 or 7 or, you know, and I don't think he'll never sniff that type of number again, I don't think, unless he lands with the Yankees and he hits like 70 home runs in that fan box.
Right.
You know, I think that, you know, it's hard. You're paying for future performance and for past performance. And, you know, we're just now seeing Bryce Harper bat against pitchers that are younger than him. His whole career, he's had to play against more experienced players. And it's kind of interesting that he hasn't been able, at least this year and the last year, to hit as well, really, you know, as he did earlier on. So maybe there's more of a book on him. Maybe his approach is off. Maybe his swing has become less, you know, less simple, as you said. And, I don't know. So would you rather pay him or Manny Machado, who's I think a year or two older, certainly a better defensive player when you think about third base, and, you know, less of a head case in the clubhouse, supposedly, as Bryce is. I love Bryce, but that's the kind of the contrast, right?
All right, so Machado was born July 6th. He is 26 years old. Bryce, let's just
try to
get the reference here. And he's October. He's 25. So what? Manny's like 8 months older than him?
3 months?
Something like that.
He's either over a year or 3 months.
Okay. Well, regardless, he is 25, 26 to 25. We won't the month
couple
math
months
right now. But, this is the next question I was going to bring to you is, who would you be more comfortable paying? And you got to me before I could get to you there. Machado, on the other hand, the other big fish this offseason, he's hitting .315 with .387 OBP and 24 home runs. So similar power to what Bryce is doing, only he's hitting 100 points higher.
4 WAR by Fangraphs. Which is huge.
Yeah, and the war is a significant difference, and again he's playing a more valuable position, especially if you think that this is a guy you can stick at shortstop, where it seems like he wants to play. A shortstop who hits .315 and 45 home runs a year, you're talking about Alex Rodriguez. That is an incredibly valuable player, and to me, unquestionably more valuable to a team than Bryce Harper is, especially when you do factor in all the other stuff. What do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, I personally, so I just checked. He's a little over a year older, so he'll be 27. Well, Machado will be next year, and St. Bryce will be 26 and a half or so. So there's your age math for the day. I have concerns about Machado at shortstop. His defensive metrics are bad this year. He's one of the, you know, he's below average shortstop defensively. But, you know, like you said, that pop, if he's hitting 35 to 40 homers a year, you know, and he's getting on base at a better clip than last year is an outlier. He hit, 259 last year, which is not going to cut it. But, you know, I think there's an argument to be made either way, really. Like, I mean, I think it's close. I would pay Bryce because I think Bryce does a lot more for you in terms of the running. His base running is insane. His power is literally probably amongst the top five in all of baseball. I mean, he is like a true five-tool player. He's not going to hit for average as much as Machado probably, but there's a little more risk in Machado's profile, I think, than in Bryce's, even though we've seen kind of, you know, a pretty vacillating career so far for Bryce. But, you know, I think that they both earned two of the biggest contracts in all of baseball for good reason. And my preference is just Bryce because I think his talent, his ceiling is above anyone not named Trout.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably true. And when you're talking about pure upside, Bryce Harper probably does have the advantage, but I don't know. I'm going to play it safe. You know, I guess it also depends on what kind of team you have. If you're looking for the transcendent star, then you go Bryce Harper. But if you're a good team and you can add a safe, guaranteed superstar at a premium defensive position, even if it's third base is certainly more valuable than right field is. Then,
absolutely. Look,
then it's Machado for me.
This is relevant to both of our fan base, our fandoms, right? Like, I think that both our teams are in a position for both these players. Like, I don't think that Bryce is a White Sox. I just don't think they'll do that. But I know that Machado will be on their radar. I can just about guarantee it. And, you know, I think both will be on Philadelphia's radar. And we've seen with all the Machado trade rumors here in the last few days, really picking up steam, that he's a guy that they've clearly targeted, not just for this year, but I'm guessing longer term. So, you know, it's interesting. Like, I think that, like you say, even at third base, Machado, first of all, I think he's an upper echelon third baseman. So even if he's an average to below average shortstop, he's a super upper echelon third baseman. Plus, he's got that stick that totally carries at the hot corner. So I think that it's really like splitting hairs. They're both awesome in their own right. And I agree with you that, you know, Machado's floor is probably higher. And if you feel good about the guys you have around him, Machado is probably the safer choice. So, you know, I don't think you'd go wrong either way here.
You're right. Definitely relevant to both teams. Both teams going to have a lot of money, both full of young talent. Actually, Jerry Krasnick from ESPN said that John Middleton, who is one of the owners in Philly, he wants to be very aggressive. No reservations. I'm quoting his tweet right now. No reservations about spending money. And he says, this is hard to fathom, but I've talked to people who think that Middleton's going to try to sign both Bryce Harper and Machado as free agents this offseason. Do I think that's going to happen? No.
After Santana and Arrieta?
Here's the bigger question, though, is do I want that to happen? Because there's that guy in a couple years. And I think that guy is going to seriously consider signing with the Phillies, regardless of what the situation is, as long as the money's there.
I do not disagree whatsoever with you.
I don't know. It would be really hard because it's bird in the hand, right? If you can say, if you say, okay, you can have Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, it's difficult to turn that down, especially when there is value that you get them 2 years earlier than you would Trout. Yep. But man, if
it's also not your money,
that's true.
That's all that matters, It's like
if
there's no.
Well, it's not
my
money, but there is only so much money. Because if you sign Harper and Machado, you're not going to get Trout. You're just not going to have that money.
No. So especially on top of Arrieta and Santana.
Well,
I think Santana would be free.
Both
by
would
then,
be gone. I think both are gone at that point. Because I think that's that 2020 summer.
And then you've got Nola to resign at that point for sure.
Right. The money won't be there. You can have two max contracts, as it were. And I don't know. If I got even an inkling that Mike Trout would seriously consider signing with my team, I think I have to leave the light on for him.
I think if you had the opportunity to send both those guys, you know. Those are two great players.
Give me Machado and Trout. I'll feel good about that.
Okay. Give me Willie Mays and Dave Ruth.
Well, yeah, but that's not feasible. Right now. And Machado and Trout is feasible. Although I don't think Machado. I think Machado's going to end up a Yankee or a Dodgers.
He has
been or is about to be traded to the Dodgers per all the reports. This has been this has been an interesting 12 hours because last night all the reports were that it was the Phillies. The Phillies and the Orioles had a deal for Machado. It was going to be very expensive from the stuff that I had seen. Adonis Medina is potentially the Phillies' number two prospect. He's a pitcher. Plus Michael Franco, plus Archimedes Gamboa and Adam Haseley, who was our first-round pick last year. That is a ton for a rental. This is Kawhi Leonard.
Medina.
Yeah, well, that's the rumors that were going around last night. Who knows what's actually true? Who knows what's being circulated to try and get a better deal from another team? But if it's just Medina, if it's Medina and Franco, I'm cool with that. If it's Medina, Franco, and Gamboa, I'm cool with that. I can't give up all three of those players, though. I mean, all four of those players. It's just too much.
For a rental. I mean, there's no guarantee. I mean, granted, you're hoping for a Paul George situation here where you trade for him and he stays and, you know, and you also make a nice little run here. And that's totally possible. But, man, I think just Medina and Franco is fine. Like, I definitely wouldn't give up Hazley. I know that he's been, you know, erratic, to say the least, throughout his career, his young career so far in the minors. But I definitely would not throw him into this mix.
Hey, the one thing I will say about Adam Hazley is he has won 100% of the AA Player of the Week awards that he's been eligible for. 100% of them.
Hey, that's pretty impressive.
So
all one of them,
yeah. He has he has turned the corner a little bit, unlike the Moniacs and the Cornelius Randolphs of the world. I think he was hitting over 300 when he got called up from high A. He's hitting, obviously, had a very good first week in double A. So it seems like things have clicked for him. Yeah, 353, 476, 765 slash line in that that first week is one I would accept. But
I honestly don't know if I would trade Hazley straight up for a Machado rental. I'm not
really?
Even joking. Like, I just, like, not because of what you just said, but just because, like, look, that's a top 10 pick last year. I mean, for a half season of Machado, like, we're not talking about a year and a half or one full season. It's for a half season of him. I don't think you can do that. And I would rather have him. I know Medina's rated higher, but I think with pitching, with the volatility of pitching, I'm okay with that.
I agree 100%. I wouldn't trade Sixto Sanchez. That's the one guy who's untouchable in terms of the pitchers. But, yeah, I have no problem trading Medina. None whatsoever. There's a lot of interesting pitchers in that system right now. But, I would –
Regardless.
Yeah. Regardless, it's moot.
Yeah. It's going to be the Dodgers, right? Like,
It seems like it is already. And the turning point seems to be – their willingness to include Yusnel Diaz, who just had
an
incredible futures game.
Yeah, he was electric in that game, and I mean that was some serendipitous timing for the Dodgers because he is not known for his power at all, and to go out and bomb two against some of the best U.S. pitchers that really worked out nicely for the Dodgers, who need no help in making these types of deals and accumulating assets. So when they lost Corey Seager, I thought it'd be a real problem for them to reclaim where they were. Getting Machado, if that does materialize, is a nice way to fill that gap.
You're 100% right. It's crazy timing for the Dodgers, and it just works out so well for them. Because, I'm looking at the MLB top prospects list, and they only give Diaz a 45 power grade. This is a guy with
six
home runs so far this season. This is an average and OBP guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's never hit more than like 10 home runs in the season, if I remember correctly. He's about ready to play, which I'm guessing is kind of a factor for Baltimore to be able to get someone that's going to be able to impact the major league club soon, which might be why they're asking for Franco, for example, from the Phillies. They asked for a couple of players from the Brewers. Corbin Burns is one who's kind of lingered around the major league club. I at the end of the day, like, if that one futures game flips the switch, I think that, it proves a lot of times they say the Orioles, when you look around the table, who's the idiot at the table? A lot of people have said it's the Orioles. Apologies to Baltimore fans, but that's sort of been the case. The fact that they can't cultivate such amazing pitching talent. When you look at Gossman and Bundy, who have had flashes, but like Bundy and Jake Arrieta was one, another one. I mean, they've had a ton of guys come through there and just suck there and then leave and be awesome. So, I think Gossman is kind of the sleeping giant too there, that if he ever ends up leaving, a lot of people believe he's going to turn into an ace somewhere else. So, there's something up there, and this would be just another example of that front office coming up short.
Well, let's talk about some other guys who could be leaving. Who else do you think Who are the big names that could potentially get traded? I know we talked about Brad Hand a couple of weeks ago. He's definitely available. DeGrom's agent says the Mets should trade him. Do you think DeGrom gets dealt?
No, I don't. Not by this deadline. I mean, there's just too much groundwork that needs to be laid for a trade like that. I mean, again, the Mets could do something like that, but they also don't really have a functioning GM, right? They've got like a ownership group and they haven't really decided. So, I don't think that DeGrom moves and DeGrom's not moving. I mean, I honestly, after Machado, the names are not very sexy. You're probably looking at like J.A. Happ. Mm-hmm. Like you said, Brad Hand is probably the second best. Britain is going to be another one that gets you quite a bit to Baltimore if they do a good job of trading him.
They won't.
I think
Cole Hamels, Whit Merrifield.
Moustakas for sure. Yeah. I think that Archer is another name that could be
dealt. Interesting.
I just think that the Rays have done their due diligence, so they're in the place where they could make that trade, where the Mets have been so ill-prepared for trading DeGrom that won't happen. I just don't see that happening. Not yet, at least.
Archer's an interesting name, but do we think he's this sort of like number three pitcher who's going to be in the fours, or do we think he's the pitcher he was early in his career?
Yeah, I mean, I think he could use a change of scenery. I really, I think his talent is through the roof, but there's something else. His profile is odd. So I'm not really sure what their plan is there. I think he walks like 4.5 guys a game or so. It's just some weird stuff. And he also strikes out a ton of players. So another pitcher that's been talked about a lot is Michael Fulmer from the Tigers.
Okay.
Rookie of the year, two years ago. He's a big name. I think the Tigers are definitely in asset accumulation mode, so they might be looking at that. I mean, for me, White Sox are listening on Jose Abreu, but I highly doubt they'll ever trade him because of what he means to Moncada and some of the younger Latino players. I'm trying to think of some others, but it's not a super exciting deadline right now the way it's looking. Yeah. And I mean, generally, the big deals for big names go down in the offseason.
Right. Interesting move that's sort of on the horizon in the baseball world is that there's a mounting feeling that there's the universal DH is coming soon. What do you think about this?
Yes. I mean, I think it's long overdue, but
yes.
I also kind of understand like the charm of having the pitcher bat, but it's just like, come on, standardize this thing and it's going to preserve pitcher health, which is obviously like the number one issue right now in baseball. So, I doubt a lot of pitchers get hurt batting, but it's just another thing that one last thing they have to worry about, which is nice in the NL. So, I think that I'm for it. What do you think?
I think the DH is kind of one of those dangerous things where it falls under the category of we do it this way because we've always done it this way. And I think that's an incredibly dangerous thing to do, not to look ahead, but look to the past for the decisions we're going to make. It's ridiculous.
True.
I don't understand why one league has one set of rules and the other one has another set of rules. That I've never been able to get my head around that. And it doesn't make any sense.
Stupid.
It should be changed immediately. At the end of the All-Star break, the National League should have a designated hitter. Let's just fix it. Let's fix it now.
It's ridiculous. I don't even know how it originated. I mean, I guess there were the two leagues and one had one little tiny rule that the other one didn't. And it's stupid. Like it makes no sense. They play each other. Like it doesn't make sense. So I think we'll look back in 10 years ago or 10 years from now and be like, remember when pitchers hit? That was just ridiculous. And only for half the league. So,
and you would think baseball would want to get rid of it as quickly as possible, too, because it makes the game more exciting to have guys who can actually hit the ball up to bat.
For sure. I really don't understand it.
And it normalizes free agency, too, because you're talking about pitchers in the American League having to face tougher hitters than pitchers in the National League.
True. Yeah. I mean, one less guy, one of every nine, you get a pitcher who's going to hit solid 150 worse than whoever would otherwise be batting.
And it's not even that. It's not a pitcher to some guy. It's a pitcher to some guy who is on the team to hit the baseball, and that's basically it.
Yeah. kind of ridiculous. Yeah, look, the one thing I will say that I like about it is the increased strategy. It's like less plug and play, the double switches and all that. But we are seeing more of that, though. Like, even the Rays are doing it now with this whole starters, quote unquote, not starting, what do they call them? Leaders, whatever it is, the guys who start, beginners, the ones who start the game, the bullpen guys that effectively start the game. And then you have the double switches, and you have, you know, a pitcher in the outfield switching to a position and then to the mound. And I kind of like that. So I think that there will still be creative ways for managers to overthink things, and we'll get there soon.
That's fine with me, but let's have all the rules for all the teams be the same. That's all I want.
Oh, yeah.
Is it too much to
100%.
Ask? Is it too much?
I don't think so. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back.
Hey, guys, Chris here, and I want to talk to you once again this week about Skybook Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of the Underdog Podcast, and our favorite sportsbook, regardless of whether or not they're sponsoring the show. We've tried a bunch of sportsbooks, and if you want fast payouts, Skybook is for you. If you want an easy interface, Skybook is for you. And if you want incredible options for what you can wager on, Skybook is definitely for you. From the World Cup to Major League Baseball to football, even football prop bets. Are you getting ready for the NFL season? Are you getting excited? Are you thinking who's going to be MVP? Who's going to win Rookie of the Year? Skybook has those Rookie of the Year odds up already. You got Saquon Barkley of the Giants plus 140. That's stealing money. That is absolutely stealing money. Put down $100, win $140 on Saquon Barkley. Skybook's also got an incredible 100 for 100 offer for our listeners. All you have to do is deposit a minimum of $100, and they will give you a $100 cash bonus. That's $200 for $100. You're not going to beat that deal. It carries an incredibly reasonable 18x rollover, and that amazing offer is valid to all new signups from the continental United States and Canada. And on top of that, you're not only getting the extra $100. On top of that, they're also going to give you a $25 casino chip for free, just for doing it. So go do it, and you'll be happy. Visit Skybook Sportsbook at skybook.ag today for all your sportsbook needs.
All right, we are back. Anshu Khanna, it's that time of the show. Let's do some lines, buddy. Let's do some lines.
So to speak. To be clear, we're talking gambling.
We have we had some fun last week. Had Greg on. It's always an opportunity to talk mixed martial arts, which admittedly I know nothing about, but we got the opportunity to do some MMA lines. Today, we're going to do some football lines, and we're going to move into some football talk right after this.
Whoa,
specifically,
nice.
Odds to win the division on Anshu Khanna, and then we're going to progress from there a little bit. We're going to use all the lines from our friends at Skybook Sportsbook once again this week, and let's start in the NFC West. Odds to win the division. We've got the Arizona Cardinals at plus 1,200, the Los Angeles Rams minus 125, the San Francisco 49ers at plus 250, and the Seattle Seahawks at plus 450 as per Skybook. Who are you taking?
Wow. Well, so last year the Rams won the division, right, going away.
Yes.
And then you had the Seahawks, Niners, and then Cardinals, I believe.
The undefeated Jimmy Garoppolo-led 49ers.
Yeah, that plus 250 sounds pretty nice, but I'm going to go a different direction here.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the Seahawks at plus 450. I know that they've hemorrhaged players. They've lost everyone. Their first-round pick was odd. Earl Thomas wants out of there, as you tweeted from our accounts. I mean, I still think that plus 450, that's like – crazy underdog odds. They still have the second place schedule, so it won't be too bad. I think the Rams are kind of overrated going into the season. Let's not forget, as you know, being in your backyard, there aren't a lot of lifelong LA Ram fans.
There are not.
I'm guessing a lot of those games are not going to be full fledged home field advantage games that you would normally give to a team like that. I'm going to go with the Seahawks. I like the Seahawks with those odds. And the reason why I'm not picking the Niners in this is because I haven't seen enough of them. I think that they're a little bit overrated in terms of odds. So while I think they'll be better, a lot better this year in terms of final record, I like the Seahawks and the proven commodity there.
Yeah, you're right. You don't see a lot of Jared Goff jerseys when you're walking down the street around here. Let's move on to the NFC South. Skybook has the Atlanta Falcons plus 175, the Panthers plus 275, the Saints plus 150, and the Bucks plus 1200.
Wow. Ooh, that is not much love for the Bucks there.
No.
It's tough for me to argue against the Saints, although I'll be rooting against them since the Packers hold their first rounder next year. But, they look so good last year, and they're so young. I mean, that influx of young talent that they got was just huge for them. And, I think this is a pretty interesting division, but I'm surprised the Saints aren't closer to even. I will take New Orleans in that one.
All right, the NFC North, the Chicago Bears plus 800, the Lions plus 550, the Packers plus 150, and Skybook has the Vikings plus 125.
You know, I got to be a homer here and pick the Packers there at plus 150. I mean, I get why people like the Vikings. I mean, having Kirk Cousins, bringing back Dalvin Cook next year is going to be huge. They bring back a lot of that defense. Obviously, they made that huge run and came within an absolute blowout at your boys' hands of winning the NFC. But I don't see how they're going to be better this year with Kirk Cousins than they were with Case Keenum last year. And I think that Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, with all the changes they made, I like Mike Pettine, defensive coordinator. And just the flat-out fact is, when Aaron Rodgers plays, the Packers win the division. Like, they do it every single year that he's healthy. They've won a ton of games. Now, that is a big if with the health factor, but I just think that the Packers, if their offensive line is healthy and Aaron Rodgers is consequently healthy and they have a better defense, and they added, obviously, Jimmy Graham and some other really Mahomes Wilkerson, some nice pieces, I like the Packers with those odds, personally. What do you think? I feel like I have a little bias here.
I can't argue with that. You're right. When Aaron Rodgers is healthy, the Green Bay Packers win the NFC North. It's just a matter of keeping Aaron Rodgers healthy. He says he's going to play to 40. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, sadly, that's only 5 years away, so I kind of expect it. He's actually – that's the first time I've heard him say he wants to play till 40. In the past, he's – maybe it's just semantics, but he said he wants to play well into his 40s. So
I hope
that Danica Patrick isn't – I hope he's – she's not influencing him so much that he wants to retire here in a couple of years.
let's move on to the NFC East. Skybook has the Dallas Cowboys at plus 400, the Giants at plus 500, the Philadelphia Eagles minus 160, and the Redskins plus 600.
Wow, minus 160 for your boys?
I know what Ben McAdoo would say.
Boy, God, minus – I mean, I think that the Eagles are going to win the division for the record, but plus 500 – I mean, minus 160 is like – that's like the equivalent of like a money line when a team is minus four in a game. Like, that's basically them being a far and away favorites. I kind of like the Giants. I hate to say it, but I kind of think that with those odds, I would bet the Giants. Like, I think that the Eagles are definitely going to win the division, but I like New York's odds in that one. And I wouldn't sleep on Washington this year. Like, Alex Smith, I think you don't like them at all. I think that they're going to be a lot healthier. Their defensive line is going to be really good next year, I think.
Well, they're going to be fine. That's a fourth place team in the division, I think. You're right. I think the smart gamble, if you're going to gamble on somebody, is the Giants, and you're assuming that offense is going to be dynamic with Barkley and Beckham.
Exactly.
So I can see
that. And not Ben McAdoo.
Yeah. Although I will miss that kid in the stands, the little Ben McAdoo. That will be disappointing.
That's the kind of hard-hitting analysis you come to hear from one Chris Wardell. That's very true.
McAdoo is just he was such a joke as a head coach. It was just he wasn't ready.
He really
I think was. That his recent comments make it very clear that he's not mature enough to be a head coach in the NFL, I guess, is one way to look at it. Great coordinator. You know, great coordinator and interesting if you put a microphone in front of him, but he wasn't ready to be a head coach. And so anything is an upgrade from there. I think Eli's going to bounce back. And
Saquon and Odell and all those receivers, remember what they were playing with in the middle last season? I don't think that they're going to win the division, but just odds-wise, That's bizarre, I think.
Yeah, that's a good gamble. Let's move to the AFC West.
Skybook has the Broncos plus 500, the Chiefs plus 250, the Chargers plus 150, and the Raiders plus 300.
Wow. All right, so that division is just wide open. I'm interested to hear what you have to say. So the Chargers are the favorites, is what you're telling me.
That's interesting to me.
I was going to guess that the Chargers would actually be kind of under the radar there. But it sounds like they like them a lot. I tend to like the Chargers too, and those odds are decent, plus 150. They basically are saying it's a coin flip between the Chargers and everybody else, I guess.
Well, everybody bought the Broncos. Oh, yeah.
And the Chiefs at plus 250 is interesting too.
The Raiders at plus 300 is interesting.
All three of those. I don't think the Broncos are going to do it just because their quarterback situation is such a cluster. But then again, Case Keenum was better last year. That is going to be a fascinating division. Mm-hmm. Honestly, if I had to pick one, I think I do go with the Chiefs now that I think about it. I really like Patrick Mahomes. I think that he comes out, although they lost Matt Nagy as their offensive coordinator, I do think that they've still got a lot of explosiveness there. They add Sammy Watkins, say what you will about him, but I think that Mahomes with those guys is going to be really interesting. So I like the Chiefs at plus 250.
All right, the AFC South. Skybook has the Texans plus 200, the Colts plus 550, the Jaguars plus 175, and the Titans plus 300.
Okay, I think I found my favorite one so far. I love the Titans plus 300 in this.
Okay.
I think that I as long as – all right, first of all, Andrew Luck, obviously a huge asterisk to this whole thing, sure. But I just – there's no way you can go into a season thinking he's going to play 16 games. I was going to say 10 games, 16, right. Let alone 16. So, I mean, over under, how many games would you – what would you set the line at for Andrew Luck game started?
If I'm Vegas, that's hard. 8.5.
Yeah, that's not what you want.
No.
One bad injury screws over. So I'm rooting for him. I hope he gets right. But I like where the Titans are at. I love Matt LaFleur as their new offensive coordinator. I think that, I'm a huge Mariota guy. I think that he's an absolute star. If he can just stay on the field and I like the new head coach. So I really like them. I think that the Titans are a good bet. I know that the Jaguars defense was amazing last year, but I just cannot bet on Blake Bortles to last the whole season. So that's another interesting, man. Those are two very interesting divisions.
By the way, if you're saying that the Titans are your favorite line so far, the one I would stay as far away from as possible is the Texans plus 200. This is fourth worst record in the league last year. And I think Deshaun Watson is going to have a Dak Prescott-esque bounce back season. I think he played way above his head. And yeah, I don't think he's going to play to that same level. I mean, I saw, I don't remember if it was PFF or one of those similar sites, but he had the highest percentage of interceptable balls thrown from any starting quarterback last year. So a lot of luck for Deshaun Watson this season.
That Seahawks game, if you remember, it made it the best game of the regular season. But his first pass, I believe, was a pick six. And then the rest of the game, he was absolutely insane. I think that Deshaun Watson is a good quarterback down the line, but the love for him is just insane. I mean, I hope he stays healthy. But when you talk about two of your three best players coming off of serious injury, talk about Watt, obviously, and Watson, there's no way I can get on that bandwagon.
Yeah, it's very much like Dak, I think, because, you know, that first year, these kind of unconventional players, and I think Deshaun Watson certainly falls into the same that unconventional category of quarterbacks, they just take the league by storm. There's no tape. Defenses don't know what to expect. Year two, defenses adjust. Year three is the question mark. Now, can that quarterback make an adjustment in return?
I think Watson's an even bigger question mark coming into his second year than Dak was, in part because A, his stature, he's smaller and slighter, and B, you know, I think he's a better player than Dak coming out for sure, not even really close. He's coming off an injury. I mean, Dak didn't come off a terrible injury like that. So, to me,
Yeah, and Watson's not playing behind that Cowboys offensive line.
Great point. Yeah, he doesn't have a guy who can take up blitzes like Zeke either. So, yeah, no thanks. I would stray very far away from the Texans.
Yeah, that is my stay the hell away from it pick that we've seen so far.
Good call.
All right, AFC North. I'm going to not say anything about this one. The Baltimore Ravens are plus 450. Skybook has the Bengals plus 800. The Browns plus 1,000. And the Pittsburgh Steelers minus 250.
Wow. Oh, man. God, that is ridiculous. Minus 250, yeah. You said, for the Steelers?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
this is the one. Vegas believes that this division has already been decided.
I just don't see how you can say that. Like, I
agree.
I don't know how you can say that. This is going to be an odd one, but I might go with the Bengals plus 800 here. I think the Bengals are, you know, they're not great, but I do think that they're going to be much improved. They're going to be healthy on the offensive line for the first time in forever. That trade for Cordy Glenn is one of the most underrated moves of the entire offseason, where they move back a couple picks and get, you know, their franchise left tackle. When they lost Andrew Whitworth last year, I mean, he helped to make the Rams so much better, and the Bengals got so much worse. And I think by subbing Glenn in for him, that's a huge difference. They also made a couple other good pickups along the offensive line. They drafted Billy Price, which is going to be huge for them up front. Yeah. I mean, I think that the Bengals are a team that could easily they're getting grouped in with the Browns, and I also think the Browns are going to be better. I just, like, at plus 800, why can't the Bengals be, like, a 500-ish team that needs a couple lucky bounces to get to, you know, close to a division title, especially if this stuff with Le'Veon Bell should be believed with the Steelers.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
You know, I mean, and that's the thing that makes them unique. They also lost their offensive coordinator. The Steelers did, so you don't know 100% if they're going to be that team or not, you know, the same one that we've seen, and Ben's not getting any younger. So Ben, quote unquote. So I think I'd go with the Bengals there. I don't know. It's a weird one.
Well, as somebody who once interviewed Ben Roethlisberger, I feel like I can call him Ben, but
Ben, oh, wow. There you go.
Ben, he is in fact going to be 36. Le'Veon may or may not be there. I don't think this is nearly as set in stone as Vegas seems to, but
no way.
But, God bless you.
Sprinkle on the Ravens.
So just not the Steelers, is what you're saying.
Well, minus 250, you better be like an absolute lock. You know, minus 250. Yeah.
Buddy, if we thought that Vegas thought that division was decided, let's talk about the AFC East. Skybook has the Buffalo Bills plus 800, the Miami Dolphins plus 1,200. The New York Jets plus 1,400, and the New England Patriots minus 550.
Holy cow. Oh, man. There's just no way I could justify betting on anyone else. Like, I mean, minus 550 is just criminally high. Like, that is
– right.
But here's the thing. What's the road to the Patriots not winning the division? It's Josh Allen being – really good, and LeSean McCoy not getting in trouble, and
Brady Tom getting Brady gets hurt. Yeah, I think.
And
Brady
even if Tom Brady gets hurt, I'm not sure.
Brady has to get hurt. I don't know. Nathan Peterman turns into Tom Brady.
I gotta, you know, if anything, I would probably go with the Dolphins if I'm picking one of those other teams, just because like there's that randomness factor with Tannehill, sure, that you maybe string together some stuff, and you know they trade for Ogletree, and I don't know. Yeah. I don't feel good about it, but I guess I would pick the Dolphins there. But there's no way I pick anyone but the Patriots. I would just stay away from that one.
All right, odds to win the NFC Championship. I'm not going to give you everybody here. We'll just give you some of the more likely candidates.
Hey, NFC is wide open. You might need to list 10 here. Not joking.
All right. Let's go with odds to win the NFC. Skybook has in the triple digits here: Eagles plus 550, Vikings plus 550, Rams plus 650, Packers plus 800. Who else is close? Saints plus 1,000, Falcons plus 1,000, Cowboys plus 1,200, Giants plus 1,200, 49ers plus 1,200.
Okay, I like the Saints. Plus 1,000 there, just because like, if I had to pick one, I mean, it's hard to bet against the Eagles bringing Carson Wentz back. And, you know, obviously not trying to pander here, but they looked amazing. You know, the Vikings are obviously a team that in the playoff that are very likely to make the playoffs and are going to be dangerous once they're there. Packers, you're just betting on Rodgers' health basically. And, you know, if they are, they're kind of hovering, but I'm really surprised that the Saints are so well here. Like, their defense was a lot better. And if they win the division, that home field advantage is maybe the best in football. Like, I mean, still, and I know teams get up and down on them, but you know, I think that they're so much better with Lattimore in the back end. And, you know, the fact that they've got Kamara and, you know, they've got Ingram and they've got so many different things they can do. My biggest, and then they add Cameron Meredith, which is another underrated pick. So I kind of, I like the Saints there with plus 1,000. I kind of like them. What are your thoughts in terms of the odds?
I agree with you that the Saints are a solid pick there. I don't want to take up too much time because this is already turning into a very long segment. But I like the Saints are good. Can't root against the Eagles, so I have to go Philadelphia Eagles. And for the record, because I value my relationship, I have to pick the Browns in this next one to win the AFC.
Oh,
by the way, they are plus 2,800. Other candidates.
Throw a couple bucks on there.
If things go wrong for the Browns, the other candidates to potentially win the AFC are... Patriots plus 300, Steelers plus 500. This isn't in order, so bear with me. I'm trying to do it in order in my head here. The Chargers plus 900, Jaguars plus 900, Texans plus 900. We've got the Chiefs plus 1,000, and then it kind of falls off. Raiders 1,400, Broncos 1,400.
I kind of like the Chiefs plus 1,000. Look, I'm looking for deep cuts here because I think that plus 350 is still – it's like the whole field against the Patriots.
Right.
I mean, like, I guess the one thing going for the – one thing, one of the many things going for the Patriots is the fact that they have basically got it locked up that they'll be there, where I'm not sure that any other team is a lock to be there. So you have to think about it through that lens. And if that's the case, I mean, I guess – but, like, ultimately there will be five other teams. And if those five teams are, you know, the Steelers – some combination of the Chiefs and or Raiders, you know, like those teams can all, and the Jaguars proved that they could almost beat the Patriots last year. I think the Patriots sheen is sort of wearing off here. So I'm inclined to bet against the Patriots, against my better judgment, generally speaking, but I don't know. I think I'd probably go either Chiefs or I think the Titans have to be like plus 1,200. I'd bet on one of those and then you just hedge in the playoffs pretty much.
All right, our last one here, odds to win the Super Bowl. Our best odds are...
got to be Patriots-Eagles.
Patriots plus 700, Eagles plus 800, Steelers plus 1,200. Steelers 1,200. Wait, what? This is... No, there's a zero missing here. I don't believe that the New York Jets are plus 1,500.
No, 15,000 maybe.
Yeah, there's got to be a zero missing there, but somebody might want to get on that at Skybook right now. The Saints are plus 1,600, the Vikings plus 1,000, Rams plus 1,000, Packers plus 14, and then there is the Falcons plus 16, and of course the Cleveland Browns plus 6,000. Not the worst odds, by the way.
Yeah.
The Bengals, Bears, Bills, Cardinals, Dolphins, and Redskins are all plus 10,000.
Wow. I mean, that's surprising with some of those names that you just rolled out there. But I like, you know, I said the Saints. I think the Saints are a really nice pick with those odds. I don't think they should be lower than teams like, you know, the Packers and others. And, you know, the Vikings, I think, are extremely overpriced here. I would not touch that. I think that, you know, I think that you got to look at, like, who's got a nice path into the playoffs. So who's got two crappy teams in their division where they can get three or four free wins? And that, to me, you know,
Patriots.
Obviously – the Patriots scream that. I think that if you – the South, I think the AFC South is a division where you've got some free wins, so that's why I like the Titans. I think the Chargers are interesting, although that could be a wide open division. So that's why I hesitate with them. But, like I always avoid the absolute favorite in the Super Bowl pick, because that's way too low for all the things that have to happen for that to work out.
Yeah, I agree. All right, there's some good, interesting football stuff happening this week. Let's talk about the Le'Veon Bell thing. Declined his contract, did not come to an extension with the Steelers. You know, Ross Tucker says that Le'Veon could even hold out deep into the season. Le'Veon's currently saying that the plan is to be ready for the regular season, but who knows what's going to happen. His agent says this is probably Bell's last year in Pittsburgh. What do the Steelers do here, and what ends up happening? When does Le'Veon Bell crack the Pittsburgh Steelers lineup?
Oh, man, it's a great question. I mean, he's got to play at some point this season, I think.
Yeah, he's got an accrue a year. But he has to be back by week 9, I believe, or week 10.
Yeah, because otherwise, his contract doesn't become voided. Like, he'd have to basically play on his contract next year.
Yeah, he does. You have to play. I don't remember if it's week 9 or week 10. That's why when you see those holdouts, those prolonged holdouts, everybody always comes back by a certain point. Because if you don't come back by that time, you don't accrue enough credit for that to count as a year towards your contract.
Sure, sure. That makes sense. So the alleged deal was, what, 5 for 70?
5 for 70.
Five for 70. I believe it was only $10 million guaranteed, which is crazy low for a running back. I mean, are at the mercy of your team at that point. And so I don't know. Like, to me, I don't blame him, really. Like, play 8 games for a guy who's been injury-prone in the past. I mean, even if you don't make your full amount this year, it's worth it because you know next year he's going to get paid. And if that's the case, like, you just think about that risk quotient and, not tolling another half season on your legs, and he's not the youngest running back in the league. I actually totally understand where he's coming from on this. Now, if I was the Steelers, what I would do is load up on a guaranteed year to make sure that he plays this game, because it seems clear to me that the Steelers don't really want him long term at what they know he's going to cost.
Yeah,
so just make sure he's there the whole year.
But that's the thing. If you're Le'Veon and you're in this lame duck year with the Steelers, you know you're not coming back. The Steelers know you're not coming back. So the Steelers aren't worried about putting miles on those tires. Why would you want another 400-touch season before you hit free agency at 30 as a running back?
I think it'd have to be some kind of creatively worded, incentive-laden deal where they restructure what they already have. And
at 27, I'm sorry, it's not 30, but still.
Right, 27, which, I mean, that's about what LeSean was, I think, before you guys traded him, right?
Yeah.
27, 28. Something so, you can – I still think he's got production, but he's also got an injury history that concerns me a ton. And, if you're Le'Veon, do you turn down? Well, I don't know how much the Steelers have left, but generally they're pretty good with their cap. So, ideally you just basically fully guarantee this season or incentivize it like crazy so that Le'Veon feels like the better he performs, the more it's worth, even if it does take X amount of touches. Which honestly, from the Steelers' perspective, they don't want him running into the ground throughout the season because they have designs on winning a Super Bowl. So, I don't think that they necessarily go into the season saying we're going to run this guy, give this guy 30 touches a game for 16 weeks. I think that, it benefits both sides to just increase the guarantees this year, but make sure he's there throughout the season. And then just understand that after this year, you can see where it goes, but likely he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, you say that they don't want to run him into the ground, but even looking at last year, the guy had 321 carries and was targeted 106 times. That's 427 potential touches.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's going to kill a running back.
Yeah, especially an older one, like you said. But that, again, that being said, so you justify it by giving him the guaranteed money that he wouldn't otherwise be given, So you basically incentivize him. I don't know.
I don't think there's a solution. I think you just, I think the best thing
just
for him.
It's a weekend.
I would be so much, if I'm Le'Veon Bell, I'm concerned about my next contract and not this year.
I don't care if I lose half of, let's see, he's making, Le'Veon is making.
Franchise, football, right?
Yeah, Pro Football Reference isn't doing me, is doing me dirty at the moment. But yeah, you know, he's playing on a franchise tender. I don't know. Let's call the franchise number for a running back, 14 million.
14 and a half. It's 14 and a half.
Is it? Good guess. Yeah. All right, so let's say I'm more concerned about my next contract than losing $7 million. Way more concerned. I'm sitting out until the last second I have to. I'm not going to be at training camp. I'm not at the preseason. I'll see you week 9, week 10.
Wow. That's interesting. So if they – well, he's guaranteed this year as long – 14 and a half, as long as he gets there and he plays throughout the season. So
are you forfeiting game checks when you're holding out, though?
Yep, you are. As long if you're franchise tagged, you are.
Right.
So right. Unless the Steelers rescind the franchise tag, he's guaranteed that 14 and a half.
All right. Well,
which
regardless.
They still can, by the way.
So it's the Jabari Parker thing, and then he's going to sign with the Bulls for a two-year.
Oh God.
We're going to talk about that in a second. Weird situation for Le'Veon. The Earl Thomas one in Seattle is also weird. Earl Thomas goes on Instagram and he basically says, hey, extend me or trade me. What do you do if you're the Seahawks? And by the way, is there an Earl Thomas for Le'Veon Bell trade?
Ooh. I don't know what the Steelers' safety situation is, but that could be interesting. Well,
just drafted the lesser of the brothers in the first round, who everybody thought was a monster reach. The Edmonds, Terrell Edmonds.
Terrell Edmonds, yeah. Yep, that's right. Good call. If you're the Steelers, I don't think you do that just because Le'Veon for this half season is going to still be like at the end of the day, the Steelers probably think that they're very likely to make the playoffs as they should. And you know, you become special with Le'Veon Bell, and without him, I don't know that you are. Like, I think that they already have enough issues with their 36-year-old quarterback we alluded to earlier in the new offensive coordinator. But I don't think that they need a guy like Earl Thomas for Le'Veon Bell. But although it is interesting.
This never happens in football, so it's absurd to even talk about. But but
that's our
the Seahawks also took a running back in the first round. So what if trade here is Le'Veon Bell and Terrell Edmonds for Rashad Penny and Earl Thomas? Who says no?
Sure.
Penny would look very good in that Steelers offense with his skills.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing the Steelers say no, honestly. Le'Veon's so special for them.
Yeah, but he's gone. You have no shot of retaining him.
Not necessarily.
Necessarily. 100% he's gone. You know that. You know how this happened. He gets pissed off that team. 100% he's gone.
They just offered him an extension. We don't know that he's gone.
And he was allegedly insulted by it. The deadline is passed. He's done. He is done in Pittsburgh. Earl Thomas can be their new Troy Polamalu.
Wouldn't shock me. The Penny thing makes it a little bit more interesting, but I still don't. I don't know. I don't think that's happening.
Of course, it's not going to happen. That kind of trade has never happened in the NFL.
No. Sadly, because that's a pretty cool offer. No.
Last football thing before we talk a little bit about the Chicago Bulls, right quick at the end. Let's talk about Terrell Owens. T.O. at 44 years old. Has expressed interest in playing in the CFL. He has activated his 10-day clause because the Edmonton Eskimos have his rights. Allegedly, Owens ran a 4.4 a couple of weeks ago at 44. I don't believe it. I don't know if he was that fast when he was when he was 24. But if anybody is gonna retain his speed, it's Owens, who is amongst the top 0.0000% to 1% of people in the world in terms of physical fitness.
True.
Owens to the CFL at 44 years old, is this anything more than a publicity stunt?
From whose perspective? I think Owens still thinks he can play, to be clear. I think that the team, obviously, it's got to be a publicity stunt. There's no way he signs there on his merits at 44 years old.
Right. But this is a Hall of Fame wide receiver who is still in great shape.
Sure. So I think Jerry Rice probably fulfills all those too.
Where do you – all right. If T.O. were to sign with the Edmonton Eskimos in the next week, I think I saw that his debut could be August 2nd.
Oh, man.
Where does he rank in the the percentile of the top receivers in the CFL?
Basically, you have to think, is he better than a second receiver on an average college football team? Because that, is who he's going up against.
He could be in the middle.
He could be in the middle. I don't know. I mean, he's going to get hurt in 5 seconds, I assume. Yeah, he's 44 years old, for Christ's sake. So, I don't know.
Hey, 44 is the new 24, if you ask Mr. Owens. It's weird, though.
That'd be awesome.
Also, Brandon Cook's got a big contract extension today. Whatever, it's fine. We've talked about the Rams enough. Let's talk about the Chicago Bulls.
Much. No.
All right. First of all, I want to talk. Summer League is ending right now. The Lakers are playing Portland for the Summer League title tonight. Josh Hart, a monster. Josh Hart is a monster for the Lakers. I couldn't understand why 29 teams passed on him in the draft last year. He went 30 to Utah, got traded to the Lakers for Tony Bradley. I thought he was, I always thought he was going to at least be a good pro. He looks like he could be better than that. And also, there's creating something. This is digression a little bit here. It's creating there's something of an inequity with older college players now. Like Javon Carter is another example of this. Javon Carter looked sensational in Summer League. How are we letting these guys last into the second round to pick 30 just because, oh my God, Josh Hart was 21 years old when he was drafted. He was still, as a senior, younger than Mikal Bridges, and Mikal Bridges went 10.
Yeah, so that means if he's younger than Mikal Bridges, then the inequity is not the age thing. It's just, I think that there are some, there's something.
It is.
There's something.
The ages are relevant. I'm saying it needs to be paid attention to. It's the class. Hart was a senior. Carter was a senior. We assume these guys are done.
Gotcha.
Seniors are so overlooked in the draft. Like there's a real opportunity to add quality players, but everybody just wants a 19-year-old European who's never going to come over.
Hey, I could not agree with you more. I think we spent a lot of time before the draft talking about guys with useful skill sets. Like I talked about Grayson Allen over and over again. I just cannot imagine Javon Carter, same thing. I mean, like you said, if this guy is going to be a quality off-the-bench defensive player for you, and potentially it could be more if you learn to hone in that shot. I mean, look, I don't get why guys like this slip. I really don't. I don't get why Jalen Brunson doesn't end up going in the top 20. Like, there's just guys that boggle my mind. And,
how about Svi Mykhailiuk? Let's stay with that Lakers team. Mykhailiuk looks unbelievable in Summer League.
I think
rein in expectations, but still looks great. And he has a translatable skill set, like you're saying.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that part of it is like you're just constantly shooting for the moon or seeing stuff that – trying to see stuff that's not necessarily there. And I think there's so much overthinking with evaluations at times that, you don't just sit and watch a dude and know that skill is going to be there for you at the next level and just – I also think that the NBA is bad with this, with stereotypes. I think that they do a terrible job of locking players into boxes and comparing players to players that they've kind of seen before, rather than trying to explore the idea that in a few years, this is a guy you might use. You're very likely to use, I would even say. So, yeah.
Aren't you? I was going nuts. I'm watching this draft in, 2017. The Sixers are picking, I don't remember if it was 26 or 27. They trade up to 24 to draft the 7'2" Latvian by the name of Andreas Pachesnik or some such nonsense.
Yep.
And honestly, it's irrelevant because he's never going to be anything. And Josh Hart's on the board. I knew, Kuzma was on the board as well, but Kuzma's an anomaly. And honestly, I don't think he's as good as he looked last year. But Josh Hart's on the board. Like, we know what this guy is. We know his floor is he is an incredibly valuable 7th or 8th man.
That was his floor. Yep. He rebounds, he plays defense, he can handle the ball, he can shoot the three. What else do you want?
I mean, especially in that range. I just keep saying it. Like, when we look back at these drafts, it's like, at the time, Taj Gibson is garbage. Oh, yeah, he's an old player. He's going to be crap, you know, whatever. And then you just know that this guy's going to play a role, but you just, like, God forbid, Carlos Boone, same kind of thing. Like, you know that these guys are going to have a role in that version of the NBA. So why do you pass on them just because they're not going to be a superstar, a megastar? I mean, and then the other thing is that when you have a floor like that, it means your ceiling can be higher. Like, that's just merely their floor. We know what they're going to be, but they could also be way better than that. And I think that there are just so many, the NBA is just littered with examples of these types of players because GMs are afraid of missing out on the Giannis's and those types, which in reality, like you said with Kuzma, I mean, there are just anomalies left and right. And, you know, there shouldn't be that much fear in the floor, because those floors are important when you're filling out a roster.
Yeah, Hart's got a legitimate chance to be the starting shooting guard for the Lakers this year.
Yep.
You know, it's just incredible. It's incredible. And I would love for him to be the starting shooting guard or the sixth man for the Philadelphia 76ers, but that's not the world we live in. In this world that we live in, Ashukana, the Chicago Bulls will be starting a fellow by the name of Wendell Carter Jr. at center. What did you think of my guy, Wendell Carter Jr., the summer league?
I got to tip my cap to you, man. I will readily admit that I saw stuff for him, and I watched quite a bit of summer league, which I'm not want to do, as you know. I was very impressed with him defensively. I thought that his defensive versatility was extremely impressive. I thought that his shot looked good. The one thing I didn't see out of him, which I fear for his future career, and I think he'll always be kind of a passive player offensively, which is fine. That's what's going to happen when you play that position. But in the shadows of our conversation about Josh Hart, I think that it's important to recognize what you have in a player like this. And I think what you have is, you know, I think that the comps to Al Horford are apt. I mean, when you see him, like, his basketball IQ, his footwork defensively specifically is just so on point. And the stuff that he does, like, I didn't realize he was such a screener. Like, he screens more times per game than anyone I've ever seen. He is just, he's just constantly trying to set his teammates up. Even in summer league, when he's screening for guys like your boy Archie Diacono and, you know, Hutchinson and, you know, like Antonio Blakeney. I was very impressed with him. I thought that he was extremely poised, which wasn't surprising to me. But I, like, specifically his defensive athleticism, I was impressed. I have to tip my cap to you. I think that I underrated his athleticism.
Do you see what I'm saying? Do you see what I've been saying leading up to the draft the whole time? That in an alternate universe where he goes to a school where he's a featured big man, that he's potential number one pick. I really think that.
I don't know. I mean, look, you'd be hard-pressed to say there were more than two or three guys that were more impressive than him in terms of future value based on this summer league.
Yeah, and they were not Ayton or Marvin Bagley.
They're definitely not Bagley, for sure.
We didn't see Doncic. Very mediocre.
I didn't see much of him, honestly. He was just a lot of passive. What was it? I saw that Mo Bamba raced him at one time. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But
Mo had a decent summer league. But yeah, it's summer league. Yeah, I love Carter. I think he's just going to be such a good player for you.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a really rock solid pro. I haven't really changed my mind on that front. Like, I think that he's going to be. I always thought that he was going to be good. I just never thought he was going to be. Like, I underrated his ceiling. I'll say that. And you absolutely nailed it. And I will, like I said, tip my cap to you because I did not see that coming. But you can, there's some things you can pick up on right away, even against the quality of summer league. And you've been watching it a lot over the years. So I kind of defer to you on this, but I think that even with that as the sort of background for this, the context for this, I still think he looks pretty damn good.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think he's going to be very, very, very interesting paired with Markkanen and brand new small forward Jabari Parker.
All right. So before we talk about Jabari, I just want to ask, like, if you had to say, you know, you're looking to assemble your three, you're always in pursuit of stars. Sam Hinkie said that when he left in his exit salvo. Always looking in pursuit of those three stars. Can Wendell Carter be the second or third best player on a championship team.
Yeah, I think I think he's going to potentially a better scoring Al Horford. I really do. I don't know if he has quite the defensive intelligence that Horford does, but that's only because Horford's is super elite.
I mean, that's like a 7-8 time All-Star right there.
Yeah, I have been on the Carter bandwagon for quite some time, so this might come off as I'm overselling him, and you know, maybe I am. But I've always thought he had that kind of potential, you know, especially when we started to see the 3-point shot. Now, we've seen a lot of guys shoot in a gym by themselves, but you can watch a guy shoot and you know if it's going to be translatable to games. Like, I always talk about Willie Cauley-Stein knocking down a bunch of threes in a row in an empty gym, but he's not taking game shots. When you watched all the Carter videos, he's taking game shots. It's smooth. It comes off quick. It's translatable.
Do you put Bamba on that spectrum? Do you think his were more in the Cauley-Stein mold?
Way better, but Carter is just so much more advanced than Bamba is in terms of sort of tinkering with their jump shots to improve to the NBA level. Mo might get there. I'm going to say something super controversial here. I am more confident watching both of them shoot that Mo Bamba is going to eventually become a guy who you have to respect from, you know, 16, 18, and the occasional three than Ayton is. I've never understood it with Ayton. I've never understood it.
I think it's just because I think Ayton's shot looks pretty. Like, it looks clean to me, at least. I don't know. He doesn't get it off during games much. I'm talking specifically, really, from the free throw line. I think it looks okay. But he might have the Dwight Howard problem, too, where he's just too big.
Maybe. I mean, physically, he's a monster. Nobody compares to Ayton in terms of physicality. But I don't know. I've always been very down on him. I've said the entire time that Doncic's the best player in the draft. I stand by that to this point. And we obviously didn't get to watch him in Summer League. But you know, my power rankings at this point, in terms of my confidence level for these guys as pros, don't at me, as it were. But it might be Doncic number... It might be Doncic number one and Carter Jr. number two.
Wow. That's a strong take. I like it, though. I mean, I obviously hope you're right. I think it's hard. Like I said, I think you'd be hard-pressed to pick a guy who improved their – and he was already pretty – a lot of people are pretty high on Carter, but I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a guy who improved his general worth across the NBA circles than Carter after the summer league.
Yeah, he got really screwed because, you know, he picked Duke first and then Bagley reclassified. And all of a sudden...
And his mom...
was not happy about it.
No. But they played good soldier all throughout the season, honestly, because that could have been a bad situation.
For sure. And that's a quality that you have to like in him. He got a little bit screwed because Bagley became the big guy. He got all the post touches and Carter was just the other guy. But let's talk to Barry Parker.
Sure. Oh,
2 years, $40 million, $240 million, second year as a team option. Is it 2020? I haven't seen the breakdown.
Yeah, it's 2020.
Okay. All right. What are your thoughts as a Bulls fan? Because you know my thoughts.
Okay, so my initial thoughts, first of all, you were the first person I texted when I saw this because you have been calling for this forever. Like, I mean, literally since last offseason, I think you were talking about Jabari on the Bulls. And I first agreed, and then I thought over the course of the year that this was something that was never going to happen. Until literally probably a day before it happened. So my initial thought was, like, what the hell are the Bulls doing? Between him and Zach LaVine, like, you've committed $40 million each for the next 2 years. What is going on? But then part of that was colored by the fact that the reports were out there that it was a 3 to 4 year deal because he was a restricted free agent. So you have to send him to at least a 3 year offer sheet. And because the Bucks could match anything up to 16 to 18 million, I believe the thought was they'd have to go 3 years, at least 18 million a year, which man, that would have been a ton. Now, even with that in mind, you were saying, you know, it's going to be okay. The Bulls are going to be interesting, if nothing else. And you're kind of talking off the ledge. Then the next day comes around, and the Bulls have signed him to a 2 year deal with only 1 year guaranteed, and the next team option, thereby retaining the flexibility to sign a max guy if one would dare come to Chicago the next year, which they won't. But the Bulls, you know, one of their biggest things was the flexibility that they had retained. And I'll just say this, that I feel a lot better knowing that Jabari is not locked in for more than 2 years, and that I can freely root for him this year without, you know, assuming that, like, he's in here for the long haul and it's ruining some kind of tank or whatever for the Bulls. So I'm encouraged. I still think it's odd. I think the fit on the team is odd. I like Jabari the player. I loved him at Duke, and before then, he's obviously not been the same player. The two knee surgeries have been pretty much a disaster. But I will cede the floor to you as sort of an unbiased observer, as someone who called this a long time ago.
Well, I'm looking right now because I'm curious about with the LaVine and Parker signings, do they have the ability to finagle a max contract while retaining those two players next offseason?
They can if they have to.
It looks like Oshik has to get bought out, or he has to get cut. Yep. There's a $3 million partial guarantee.
Feliciano
would have to be moved.
Yeah, Felicio would have to be moved, but they can renounce their cap holds on Portis and one other player, I believe, and then that gets them very close to the 30, to the max. But I'm not sure.
It might be Justin Holiday, that other player.
Justin Holiday. Yep, good call. That's who it is.
Okay.
So
all right. So let's jump ahead a year here. Let's play out a best case scenario. Jabari's healthy. He looks like pre-ACL injury too, when he absolutely looked like this bouncy budding superstar in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Zach LaVine's
healthy. What do you have? 20 and 6 was what he averaged.
Yeah.
26 and 3, which is fine.
Sure. Huge, great numbers for, I think he was 22 at the time.
Yep.
Zach LaVine returns to the form of 2 years ago, pre-ACL injury. These are, you know, neither one of these guys is going to be the greatest defensive player, but both of them have monstrous scoring potential. Paired with Markkanen, who we have to assume is only going to improve in his second year, paired with Carter Jr., what are we doing? How are we rounding out this team if we have room for one max contract? I've been pushing Kemba Walker.
Yeah, I don't think Kemba is going to get max money, but he'll get enough to, like, he could slide into that. So your thoughts are Chris Dunn is your backup point guard / six-man extraordinaire, essentially, right? A combo guard that can come off the bench.
In 1920. Yeah. I've predicted some very lofty numbers for Chris Dunn this year.
You have. We keep that between ourselves. But I also think that those, what you had predicted offensively, would make him a real asset, because he is a very good defensive player, in my opinion. I know the metrics don't really judge him the same way as what my eyes tell me, what many, I think that your eyes tell you the same thing, that maybe not a lockdown defender, but a big time net positive on the defensive end. So if he's averaging, 15-ish a game, then you now have a very real asset there in Chris Dunn. So, yeah, so what you're saying is, and then, so Robin Lopez at that point is gone, right? He's now left the building. You got Chandler Hutchison off the bench. And then you fill out the rest of the roster. So you're saying Kemba and these guys, I don't know. I have trouble envisioning a scenario where Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker are both able to be explosive offensive players as you do. I just don't know if there's enough balls on the court for them.
Ooh, my guy is available next offseason, aren't you? My guy. And if you're going to play up-tempo, which you have to with this Chicago Bulls team, my guy.
Ooh,
Ricky Rubio.
Blue?
How about Ricky Rubio?
Man. I like that a lot, actually. Underrated defenders, you often say. A guy that's there's no need to shoot. He loves to pass the ball. How old is he at that point?
28.
Oh, wow. He's younger than I thought. Okay. I thought he was older than that. I'm in for Rubio. I mean, that, like, might as well, while you're at it, just never sign a max guy ever. And
well, unfortunately, sometimes that happens not by choice.
Right. And I think that that's the scenario that the Bulls saw themselves getting to. So here's, I'm just going to set up the scenario for you, Chris. But so there were two things that could have happened. And this is what Bulls Twitter, I think, grappled with and still is. And that door number one is you sign Jabari Parker for 2 years of $40 million with the team option for that second year. Door number two was absorbing a bigger contract into that space, folding that in, you know, whether it be Carmelo Anthony, whether it be facilitated that Kenneth Reed deal that happened for Denver, whether it be, you know, a third team that helps facilitate, you know, a bigger trade like for Kawhi Leonard or someone like that. And then, you know, the Bulls basically getting a draft asset and essentially tanking for one more year and getting up into the top five, which is something we talked about. So basically they paid $20 million and sacrificed that high of a pick, I think, for a look at Jabari Parker. And I think there's something to be said on both sides for that. But where do you stand, and do you think it's that simple?
Let's talk about the Nuggets situation specifically, because I think that's the one that probably could have happened if not for the Parker signing. The Fareed deal, they add Fareed and Daryl Arthur, you're right, they add about $20 million in salary, and they get a pick that is top 12 protected. If it's me, I'm going to take a shot on the guy who at 21 years old averaged 20-6 over the maybe getting the 16th pick in the draft.
And your team being worse. Like, presumably Jabari makes
you
better.
Being worse, but there are going to be so many terrible teams next year. Like, even with the talent they had on the roster right there, I still think, like we have said, you know, privately, I think they're still looking at the 7 or 8 pick. So, like, okay, so you're going to get – you take that contract and you add Rui Hachimura or somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
What does that do?
Yeah, not a ton. I you made a good point that kind of switched my view on that. What is that? But then – so the reason why I thought of that was because you brought up max contracts and the fact that sometimes it works out that way, quote, unquote. Well, that's the main part of this whole thing was if you don't sign Jabari and you do that trade, you now – you know – free up money for potentially a max and basically 3/4 of a max in the next offseason. But who's signing with the Bulls? Like, is it
okay,
Clay?
I have a name
like,
for you. I have a name for you.
Okay.
And because this person, maybe more than any other person in the NBA, desperately wants to be known as a superstar. Desperately.
Oh, boy. Oh, wow. Kyrie?
How about Kyrie Irving?
Oh, man.
I think you can sell him on being the guy who leads Michael Jordan's team back to greatness.
Oh, see, that's interesting to me. That's very interesting to me. And I think he would fit super neatly in terms of, like, running a Fred Hoiberg offense, you know, like an up-and-down game, which is what he wants.
Nobody from the 1-3 will be playing defense, but
they would be playing defense.
1-4. But good luck to Carter Jr. and Chris Dunn when he's in off the bench. But if you're playing fast and you have Kyrie, and this is all speculative, of course, but you have Kyrie, you have now healthy Zach LaVine, now healthy Jabari Parker, and emerging Lauri Markkanen and Carter Jr. Boy, that team's interesting.
That becomes a lot more interesting to me. I like that a whole lot more if that was to be the next step. Because, you know, you talked about Kemba. I think Kemba is an awesome, fun player. But Kyrie is a game changer for sure in terms of, like, your playoff trajectory. And, candidly, I think Kyrie could win an MVP with that team. Like, he could score so many points on that team.
I agree.
Like,
and
they would give up so many points.
I think you can sell them on it.
Yeah.
I think you can sell them on it.
Well, if New York thinks they have a chance at him, then I guarantee you that the Bulls should have a chance at him, just in terms of, like, building something around him. Because none of those guys that we – and, wait,
yeah,
can he play with – no. But he's another Duke guy, which is a big Bulls thing, obviously.
There you go. While I was looking at that, I did see another name that before I came to Kyrie – definitely not the player Kyrie is, but he does play on the same team. How would you feel about Terry Rozier?
Well, I often compare Chris Dunn to Terry Rozier in the last year or two.
Oh,
I've thought about them in the same light. I mean, they're not, they're like, just in terms of before Rozier just absolutely went off last year, I thought that Chris Dunn could be a Rozier-esque type of player off the bench. I did not know Chris Dunn was going to suddenly emerge as this extraordinary defensive perimeter player. It's a nice place to be. I don't think he'll ever be the scorer Rozier is, but I don't know that you then go and spend whatever Rozier's going to cost. Say, what, 3 years, $18 million a year? That's probably what he's going to be looking
for, I would assume.
That.
Yeah, something like
so,
that.
So, I don't know. I don't think that that makes you a whole lot better. I'd rather, put it this way, for, what, $6 million more a year, I'd rather have Kemba if that's even an option.
All right, so the lineup for the Bulls, 2019-2020 season. Kyrie Irving at point, LaVine at the two, Parker at the three, Markkanen the four, Carter Jr. is the five. You have guys like Blankney, Denzel Valentine, Hutchison, Bobby Portis on the bench.
Dunn,
of course. Yes, sorry. That's pretty good team. That is everything breaks right. That's potentially a home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs kind of team.
Yeah. And you hope for more after that, obviously, but I just like, and then you just take a step back and it's kind of like, what's the end game here? Like, do you just want to be entertaining? Do you want to set yourself up to bag a second big free agent the way that, you know, maybe the Thunder have done? Do you try to accumulate young assets to ultimately package some of these guys for a real, you know, game changer along with Kyrie? I love the idea of just getting who you can get and seeing what happens.
Yeah.
But I also don't know, like, when you look at the three big things standing in their way, which are obviously Boston, Philly, and then I look at Giannis, I think that's what's standing in your way forever, unless Laurie is like a really great player.
He's got to be
years.
Dirk. Yeah, he's got
to
be Dirk.
He's got to be Dirk to make that even close. And even then, like, you don't even have a Simmons or Embiid, let alone two of them. So, right. And then you don't have a Hayward or Tatum at that point.
Well, you do have Kyrie.
If you have a Kyrie, that's pretty good. That's getting close, but you're still lacking one. And I mean, that's why I asked the question about Carter, because I think that Carter has to be the third best player on a champion, but then you still don't have your second. I mean, unless Laurie, like you said, if Laurie is Dirk, then maybe. If he's not, then you're not real close in my mind.
We'll see what happens.
But it's fun to talk about, if nothing else.
That team would be, you know, regardless of what ends up happening, that would be a heck of a fun team to watch play 82 games a year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, they're going to be fun and different next year compared to last year. It's going to be way more fun, obviously, as a Bulls fan. But they'll also, like, it's hard in my mind to reconcile that with the fact that they're not really in a position to ever get to where you are right now and where the Celtics are right now. And that's, you know, it's not years away. It's a totally different path. It's not like you're tanking for year after year. You're just trying something different, which I'm just not sure about. I think that the Zach LaVine stuff is a reach to think that he's ever going to be worth what he's making over the next 4 years. Luckily there is some language in that contract that saves them from injury, but it doesn't save them from him from inefficiency, which is tough.
But every single year, superstars that we don't expect become available. And all you need to do is put yourself in a position to get the right one. That's how Boston is Boston right now.
Philly. Trust the process.
That's a different case. We didn't really go out acquiring people other than the J.J. Redick overpay.
Yeah.
And thank God that he resigned for $12 million and Amir came back for $2.4 after playing for $11 last year. They did right by the team. I fully expect JJ is going to sign a 3-year MLE next offseason after we expend the rest of the cap room. But super quick, last thing we're going to talk about, and this is going to be 30 seconds. You add a player, I lose one. Nemanja Bjelica backs out of his contract today with the Sixers. I know this doesn't seem like, you have Joel Embiid, you have Ben Simmons, you have Dario Saric, Markelle Fultz. Who cares about Bjelica? I care about Bjelica. This guy is the absolute perfect replacement for Ersan Ilyasova. This is a 7-footer who shot 41% from three last year.
He was MVP overseas a couple of years ago before he signed with the Timberwolves. I know that he's not that player in the NBA. But this is a very, very useful stretch four.
Very useful.
Who we just lost. Now all of a sudden, the options are Michael Beasley? Something like that? And I'm not excited about that. I thought Bellizia was in a great position in Philadelphia where he could look very good within the system for a year and then go get a bigger contract next offseason. But it's all for naught. I'm disappointed, and I guess Wilson Chandler is going to play a lot of small ball four this year.
Yeah, like I was going to bring up Wilson Chandler and the fact that when you make a move like that, I mean, it might seem like just something at the margins, but yeah. It's like a chess game. Everything kind of fits together. So when plan A falls through of signing LeBron, then, you know, you move on to plan B, and plan B is trading for Kawhi without giving up X, Y, and Z. Okay, fine. That doesn't work out, or that might not. Mm-hmm. So then we go to plan C, right? And then you get, and part of that is signing this guy and, you know, working Redick into the deal, into the roster and into the cap. And then also, it also means you take yourself out of the running for other players. Like, obviously, yeah. Ilyasova got paid more than they would ever have paid him. But, you know, maybe yeah. he, you know, on a shorter-term deal for more money, he becomes more interesting for them. And or maybe for him, he that becomes more interesting for him. And so, you know, there's so many balls in the air. And so I think, like, while the player, I saw his press release and it was like, yeah, like, I feel real bad, but I just rushed into it and blah, blah, blah. Like, it seems innocuous enough, but it really kills the Sixers. Like, I mean, not kills them in terms of, like, it's going to make a tangible difference in wins and losses, probably, but it is something that, you know, you have to do a bunch of other stuff differently, which sucks. It's right. a big pain in your ass.
Right, so now we're on to plan D, and my plan, and the other thing that bothers me is, if we were going to use the MLE, I would have much preferred to use it on Kylo Quinn and not brought back Amir, because Kylo Quinn is so much better than Amir Johnson is. But my plan D is I'm going to suck it up and bear it, and I'm going to sign Michael Beasley and hope his attitude's not, you know, he's not a bad guy. He's just, you know, a little bit lazy, and you hope that being here, this culture does anything for him. Like Gerald Green in Houston, maybe he can have some kind of career resurgence. But the move that I'm making today is Cleveland is desperate to unload Kyle Korver's contract. I'm trading Jared Bayless and whatever other piece needs to go in the trade, whatever other young piece to bring Korver in, because you know, being able to space the court with Korver, Saric, and Redick, none of them can play defense. Dario will try, but none of them can actually play defense. But Korver, even at 36 years old, he shot 43% from three last year. He's a career 43%
awesome.
Three-point shooter. Yeah, he's all. I'm getting that number 26 jersey ready. I'm doing whatever needs to be done because Cleveland wants to deal him. They want out of that contract. Yeah. It's actually not too bad. That I think only like $3.4 million is guaranteed in 1920, so it's not going to be prohibitive to sign a max free agent if you have to cut him. But Kyle Korver's got to be a 76er by opening day. And we've already gone super long, so we're going to end this here. This has been a fun show. We've got to talk about lot of different things, a wide variety of things. It's been The Underdog, episode number 81. I'm Chris Horwardell. He's Anshu Khanna. Thank you for listening. We'll see you right back here next Wednesday.